Tonight we continue our sermon series called The Scarlet Thread. And this is a sermon series where we look at four people or four groups of people going through life or death situations. And that the hope is we want to see how God rescues them. And perhaps just as importantly, we want to see how those people go through those life and death situations. And so last week, we started with one of the stories of Rahab's story. And that, in fact, that's where the name of the sermon series came to be, Scarlet Thread. Because in Rahab's story, God used the scarlet thread, like a red thread, a red rope, as a symbol of his salvation and of his promise. But at the same time, the scarlet thread represents Rahab's faith and trust in God during difficult times. And so that was last week. Tonight, we're going to look at a different character, and his name is Naaman. Now, if you're familiar with the name Naaman before, that probably means you're pretty well-read in the Bible, because, in fact, Naaman, the name only shows up two instances. One instance is in the book of 2 Kings, chapter 5, which is our passage today, and the other instance is in the Gospel of Luke, where Jesus mentions Naaman's name kind of in passing. And so we got two instances of Naaman's name. But even then, even though Naaman's story only shows up so briefly in the Bible, his story is a very important one for us as Christ followers. So let's take a look at his story tonight. We read in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 1. Now Naaman was the commander of the army of the king of Syria. A little backstory. At this time in history, God's people were the Israelites, the kingdom of Israel. And now, these are the people that God has chosen to be his representative in this world, especially to the surrounding nations. Now, at this time, which was around 850 BC, 800 BC, there was this other strong nation called the Kingdom of Syria on the northeast side of Israel. These two nations are constantly at war with each other, but at this very instant, there seems to be a little bit of a peace agreement, a little bit of a truce going on between the two nations. And so we're introduced to our main character, Naaman. Naaman was the commander of the army of Syria, meaning he was not from Israel. He was a foreigner. He was a Gentile. Naaman had everything going for him. He was gifted in every way because he was the commander, which meant that he was talented in warfare, in battle tactics, in strategies. He was probably skilled with all kinds of weapons. He was a great man with his master, with his king, because he had many accomplishments, he has many successes, he won many wars and battles. He probably gives pretty good advice and contributions to the kingdom. He was held in high favor by the king because of all of his contributions, his good relationships with the king. He also probably has pretty good friends at court, and he has a good reputation in the kingdom. He was a mighty man of valor. He was a strong man of might. He was probably super tall, like 6'7", 6'8". He was probably pretty handsome, pretty strong. His biceps probably the size of somebody's head. He could probably kill a 300-pound tiger with his bare hands and deadlift it back into the city. In fact, Naaman is the type of people that all parents wanted their sons to be. Naaman is the type of people that all girls wanted their husbands to be. And Naaman is the type of people that all guys just simply wished didn't exist. However, every single night when Naaman returns from war or from court, he goes into his tent, goes into his room, he looks into this bronze mirror of his, and he starts to take off his helmet and his armor. He does not see a mighty man of valor. He doesn't see a great man. He sees brokenness. He sees helplessness. He sees resentment. He sees self-pity because he sees a leper. But he was a leper. Naaman had a skin condition, a skin disease, much like the present-day eczema, you can think about it. On the good days, it's very bothersome. It's uncomfortable. On the bad days, come on. On the bad days, it's itchy, it's painful. It will disturb his sleep. It will wake him up at night. He will scratch it until it bleeds. And it will affect his physical health. It will affect his psychological health, his emotional health, his social life, his work and everything. And the worst part about this leprosy is there's no treatment for it. There's no treatment for it. Nobody knows what to do. He has tried everything and nothing has worked. And so Naaman resorted to using his armor and his helmet to cover his skin so nobody can see underneath that great man of valor is brokenness. When he stares at himself in the mirror, he doesn't see a mighty man. He doesn't see a wealthy man, a successful man. He sees helplessness. He sees a leper. I wonder if you resonate with Naaman in some ways. Maybe there's a lot of things that you're gifted with. There's a lot of things that you do well. There's a lot of things that work with your favor. There's a lot of opportunities. But there's always this one thing. There's always this one thing that pulls you down, always hinders you, you know, pulls on your back foot, that haunts you, that plagues you. It could be a sickness, a skin condition, a health condition. But it might as well be an emotional baggage, some experience you have in the past, a family history, a complicated relationship, romantic relationship, or the lack of a romantic relationship, or the lack of a career, or the lack of something. Do you resonate with Naaman in some ways? Having a lot of things, but there's always this one thing that drags you down. Now the Syrians, on one of their raids, had carried off a little girl from the land of Israel, and she worked in the service of Naaman's wife. And this little girl said to Naaman's wife, "Would that my lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria in Israel. He would cure him of his leprosy." A little Israelite slave girl giving suggestions to the great commander in Syria. Now, Naaman is desperate. He's desperate for anything, for anyone to get him out of this condition. Any sliver of hope, any scarlet threat, anything that he could hold on to. And so even though he's skeptical of this little girl from this nation that he has defeated, perhaps there's something to this prophet in Samaria. And so Naaman went. He asked his king to be on leave for duty for a month so he could seek out this prophet. And the Syrian king gladly agreed and was delighted to hear it because there is a potential that one of his greatest commanders can be healed. So he wrote a letter to the king of Israel. And so Naaman went, and he took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. A lot and a lot and a lot of treasure. Because he's desperate, he's serious, he's willing to pay any price to be healed of this one thing. And so Naaman, after a few days of traveling, came to the king of Israel, and he gave the letter from the king of Syria to the Israelite king. And the Israelite king took the letter, went into his inner courts to read the letter with his closest counsels. And the letter read this: "When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent you Naaman, my servant, that you may cure him of his leprosy." And when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive? Now this man sends word to me to cure a man of his leprosy." This Syrian king is trying to start a war with me. He's seeking a quarrel with me. He's picking a fight. And the king of Israel thought that because he thought king of Syria gave him an impossible task, which it is, to heal a man of his leprosy. But king of Syria isn't thinking about this. King of Syria heard from a little girl, "There is a prophet in your land that can heal. Why don't you ask him?" But what's so interesting is the Israelite king has long forgotten about the fact that there is a prophet or there is a God at all in his lands, because why? Because the Israelite kings, all of the kings, they always worship idols, they bring gods from other nations, they sin, they do wrong things, and so the prophets never say any good thing to them. And so then all the Israelite kings are like, "I'm going to cast you away into the countryside. I don't want to listen to you. Why don't you go away? I'm forgotten." And time goes on, and they've just forgotten about the fact that there's a prophet in this land. And so the Israelite king is in the inner courts with this letter, and he doesn't know what to do. And he's panicking with his, you know, close council members, and, you know, we can't kill this guy, we can't lie to him, we can't send him back, what should we do, what should we do? And just when he's panicking, he got a messenger. A messenger from none other than Elisha, the prophet. When Elijah, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent to the king saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Let him come now to me that he may know there is a prophet in Israel." And so the king gladly sent Naaman away. And Naaman now, with slight sliver of hope, cautious optimism, he left the palace and he went for Elijah. And he came with his horses and his chariots and all of the silver and the gold and the treasure. And he stood at Elijah's house. All of the people, all the servants, carts and carts and carts full of treasure, lining up on the road, staring at the little cabin in the middle of the forest. And he sends a messenger to the cabin. The great commander Naaman from the mighty kingdom of Syria asks for a visit. No one answered the door from the cabin, so the messenger knocked and tried again. After a few minutes, a teenage boy, dressed in a servant clothing, with a towel over his shoulder, comes running out to greet the commander. Now Naaman got off his horse and thinking to himself, how disrespectful is this prophet that he doesn't even come out to greet me himself? And just when he thought that he was going to go into the cabin, the messenger stopped him there and said, "My teacher said, go wash in the Jordan River, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be made clean." Naaman couldn't believe what he heard. He grabbed the kid by the collar, and he said, "Could you say it again?" And the teenager, the little boy, is frightened. Now he says, "My teacher said, go wash in the Jordan River 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean." Naaman was so angry, he swore he could have wiped the cabin down and burned the whole place down that night. Who does this Elisha think he is? I am the commander of the kingdom of Syria. You got a little kid coming out to greet me. And not only that, you didn't let me go in. You got a little kid giving me instructions. And so Naaman went away. He knew full well that he could have wiped out the place then and there, but he wasn't about to start a war right there. He'll report to the king and deal with them later. He got back onto the horse and turned everybody around and then left. On the way back, he thought about all the doctors and all the witches and all the sorcerers, the magicians, and all the people that he has seen. Even though none of them can heal him, everybody was at least respectful, was honoring of him, was fearful of him. Nobody, how dare this little prophet would do this thing to me? And the more he thought about it, the more angry he got. And he started to vent to his sword bearers and to his servants and to his soldiers. He told them, "Behold, I thought that he would surely come out to meet me, to look at my skin, to diagnose my cause. And then he would stand and he would pray and call upon his God, do some prayers, do some rituals, chant some stuff. And he will wave his hand and do some rituals, do some procedures, and then he would cure me of my leprosy." But he didn't do any of that. He told me to wash in where? The Jordan River? Don't I have rivers at home? Aren't the rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in there and be clean? If I need a bath, I don't have to come here. And the more he thought about it, the more angry he got, and he turned away and he went away in a rage. I wonder if any of us here has a similar experience. You have a prayer that you brought to God. You have some expectations, some solutions that you offer up to God, and not only did he not answer you, Not only did he not meet your expectation, he gave you something else entirely. He gave you a command, an instruction that doesn't make sense. We're in the Jordan River? Come on. He gave you something that's completely unrelated, or sometimes it's just something that you have heard time and time and time again. You know it doesn't work. Honestly, sometimes what he says to you is borderline offensive. It's frustrating. It's confusing. And in those scenarios, we turn away and we leave out of rage or anger or frustration or confusion. Do you know why that happens to us? Well, Beria, do you know why Naaman turned away? It's interesting you think about it. Is it because God or the prophet didn't see him? There was a messenger. Is it because God didn't give him an answer? God told him something. It's because God's thought didn't meet his thoughts. Because God's answer didn't meet his expectations. Naaman had some thoughts going in. I thought this prophet has to come out to meet me and call upon the name of the Lord. I thought he would wave his hand. I thought he would do this. I thought God would heal me in this way. And so in many ways, it's the same thing. We come to God with our thoughts. And if I can use medical terms, it's kind of like we come to God with our own prescription. It's like you already made your diagnosis. You already know what medication you need, what treatment you need. You just need your incapable family doctor to sign off on it. God, help my marriage. Change my wife. Change my husband. God, guide my career. Give me this and this and this. Help me do this. Help me give me a path here. God, I want a relationship. Give me this person and I'll be set. I want this. This is my plan, my 3-year plan, my 5-year plan, my 10-year plan. Would you make it happen? How many times have we came to God with my own or our own prescription? And we thought that our thoughts are the best. And so when God thought something different, he tells you, why don't you go in the river and wash yourself? We get frustrated. We get this, and what did you just say to me? That's not what I need right now. We turn away. Naaman turned away not because God didn't meet him, not because God didn't answer, but because God's thought wasn't what he expected. It's been 2 days since Naaman left that little cabin in the forest where he met Elijah's little servant. It was a long journey the past couple of weeks, so he decided to camp out by the countryside, by the border. And the next day, he's going to go back home. During the night, Naaman sat on a little hill and took some wine, and he reflected on his life and all that's happened. And all of a sudden, a sword bearer, his servants, his close followers, came to him and said, "My lord, if we could be so bold to suggest something. My lord, my father, if the prophet told you some impossible thing that you should do, some great and impossible task, why don't you go get this medicine halfway across the world? You can do it, and you are going to do it. Now the prophet only told you to go into the river and to dip yourself 7 times. Why don't you give it a try? Why don't you try it?" That evening, Naaman sat on the hill through the night and he thought to himself. He thought about the little girl that he's heard about all of this from, all the way back home. He thought about the little boy he met at the cabin. He thought about these little servants that follow him everywhere. Why don't you go in there and try? Why don't you try? He knows why. He's a smart man. He's intellectual. He's self-aware. He is the commander of the army of the kingdom of Syria. He is a great man in his master's eyes with high favor. He's respected by everybody. He is a mighty man of valor. He can deadlift a tiger. Throughout his life, there's nothing that his sword cannot overcome. There's nothing that his armor cannot protect him from. There's nothing his mind cannot solve. There's nothing his strength cannot beat. And he has never been face to face with this brokenness time and time and time again. And he failed time and time and time again. He has never been in a scenario where his power and his strength and his knowledge couldn't help him and lose over and over and over again. He has never been in a scenario where he not only has to listen to a little girl and then a little boy and then a little prophet from a little nation, from a little God that he doesn't even know. He has never been in a scenario where he has to surrender. Why don't you give it a try? Why don't I give it a try? Because pride and ego is a hard piece of helmet and armor to put down. Because it's hard to not trust in your own ability, in that armor, in that sword of yours, and listen to a little servant boy. The next morning, before dawn, the whole group of soldiers, guard servants, chariots, horses, turn around and headed back towards the river, the Jordan River. The guards and the soldiers knew what was going on, but they were kind of surprised. Naaman and his guards lined up alongside the Jordan River. And Naaman, for the first time in public, he took his helmet off. He took his armor off. He took his outer garments off, revealing the scars and the wounds that he's got from all the battles. And also just the flaky white skin on his back all the way up to his neck with blood and bruises. He looked at this slow-flowing river. I mean, it just looks like mud and gunk and sludge. He took off his shoes and he went to the edge of the river. He put his feet in. He can't even see his toes. He thought to himself, there's no way this is going to work. But he looked to his servant, the one that went with him, life or death, with all the battles, and he looked at him, and he thought to himself, I'm already here. Might as well give it a try. And so he took a deep breath, and he walked into the middle of the river. The water, the sludge, the mud, whatever you want to call it, went to his ankles and then to his knees and then to his thighs and then to his waist and then to his chest and then to his neck. And he took a deep breath and he put his head in and he can't wait to get out of there. It was so uncomfortable, he thought to himself. Like the mud and the gunk and everything is just clinging onto his skin. It's going to make him throw up. He thought he's going to die from skin infection before he can get down there the seventh time. He walked back to the shore and the soldiers patted him down, dried him up, and the sword bearer, his brother, wanted to ask and say something, but he decided against it. Yeah, you shouldn't say anything. Naaman thought to himself, well, I already did it once. It's too late now. I might as well finish it. So he turned around, walked all the way down the river, and then came back up. It's still the same disgusting throwing up feeling. His skin is still itchy, nothing has changed, and the soldiers wiped him down, and he went back in the third time. And he thought to himself, if this doesn't work, I am surely going to burn that prophet's place down. And he went back out, that was the third time. He turned around and he went back in. He tried to quiet his thoughts and tried to like not feel the stuff, and he came back out. He's kind of gotten used to it. That was the fourth time. He turned around, he I'm going to go to the fifth time. I'm going to try to not think about it and try to enjoy this spa or mud bath or whatever this thing is. And he went in, put his head down in the water, and came back up. That was the fifth time. And he went in the sixth time. This is it. He went down again the seventh time. And when he came out, the soldiers came to wipe him down, and all of a sudden, one of the soldiers stopped and backed off. Naaman noticed this too, the soldiers wiping his back. The towel feels rough. The towel feels really rough and dry. And he looked at his arms and his legs, and nobody could believe it. Everybody just stood there. Naaman couldn't believe it too. Not only was he healed from the eczema and the leprosy in the back, the scars that he has on his chest and the sore wound, all of this stuff, this infected wound that from a sword a couple of years ago is also gone. It's as if he was reborn. He was given a new body like that of a little child. And so the soldiers really realized what's happened, and they danced around and they celebrated, but Naaman just stood there and he collected his thoughts. He put on his garment and he realized, hey, I don't need to cover myself with the helmet anymore. He went back to the river and he kneeled down and he thought to himself, it can't be the water, right? Look at this. This is no spring, no healing spring, no spa. This is just gunk. Like, if anything, this is just mud. The prophet wasn't even here. The prophet is still in his little cabin. In fact, the messenger didn't even come here. It's just me and this river. Naaman was a smart man. He knew there could be only one explanation. And so he got all of his soldiers, all of his horses and his chariots, and they turned back and went all the way back to the little cabin in the forest. This time, the little servant boy came and invited him in. And Naaman stooped into the cabin, and he fell down before who gave the command? Elisha. And he said to Elisha, behold, I know now there is no God in all the earth but Israel. In the time when the Israelite king has forgotten about the Israelite God, a foreigner, a Gentile, came to the land and said, there is no God but the Israelite God. The great man of valor, the mighty man, the commander of the greatest nation, bowed before a little prophet in a little cabin, and he himself became a little child. And he believed in God. Honestly, we are like Naaman in so many ways. We have our strengths, we have our talents, we have our gifts, our opportunities, our skills. You might not have leprosy, but you have your own challenge. You have your own disappointments. You have your own burden, your weaknesses, your temptation, misfortune, your sin. There is something that is pulling all of us down. There's something that's dragging you down. Perhaps you've seen your own doctors. You have asked a lot of people, your brothers and your sisters, your friends, your mentors, you've asked ChatGPT, how do I get out of this stuck life stage? But nothing's happened to you. Until one day, you met a little servant girl, or a little servant boy, a little messenger, a little teacher, a brother or a friend or a preacher or a pastor, and they'll tell you, why don't you try this? Why don't you come to this church? Why don't you come and listen to this sermon? Why don't you do this? And there it is. an opportunity to be healed. And we stand there and we thought to ourselves, what should our response be? How can we be healed and be freed and to have new life, perhaps like that of Naaman? May I suggest to you three things that we should all do? First thing is we must let go of our prescription. We always come to God with, I thought this and this and this and our agenda and our expectation. But listen to me, you have a prescription to heal your leprosy. God has a prescription to give you a new life. You have a prescription to deal with this problem, to deal with your career, your relationship problem, whatever, your promotion, your life. But God says, I have a solution for your life. A solution bigger than you can ever imagine. Can you put down your prescription? Your prescription is too small. Can you put down and let go of your prescription and listen to what God has to say to you? Second thing, would you put down, honestly, put down your pride, put down your ego, put down your armor, put down your helmet, put down your status, put down your ego, put down whatever it is that you hold on to that makes you great. Because sometimes what God says to you is not going to require greatness from you. It requires obedience. And honestly, trust me, a lot of times you have better options, you have better solutions. But what God requires for you is not greatness, it's obedience to let down and put down your pride and your ego and trust and do the little thing. Dip in the Jordan River? I got rivers of Damascus at home. Sing the worship song? Nah, I've grown up from it. I don't worship that way no more. Write down stuff from the sermon? I'm not here for school. I got school 5 days a week. Join small group? I'm too cool for that. Serve? That's not for me, man. Bible study? I've done all that in RCS already. Read this book about a career, about devotion, about spiritual discipline, about growth? No, I'm not a reader. Practice generosity. You can't tell me what to do with my money. Devotion? It's the same old stuff. A lot of times what God says to you does not require greatness. It requires obedience. But this is such an unfortunate and missed opportunity. And my heart and all the pastors' heart, we ache for this. Because you're all here already. You're sitting here week after week, and why are you content with sitting here week after week after week? Nothing's going to change if you stare down at the river. Nothing's going to change if you just look at the cabin. Why don't you go in and try? This is one of the most heartbreaking stories that we hear when I'm a pastor. It's not when God doesn't heal. It's because we stand at the river and we don't go in. We see ourselves too big, too great, too successful. We have our face, we have our reputation. We don't do this. We're too good for God. Honestly, so many times the greatest barrier to experiencing God's greatness is ours. Our greatness is the barrier to experiencing God's greatness. Third thing, would you obey then and follow what God has told you to do? Every week, our pastors, our preachers, our speakers are very intentional in trying to give you, highlight something that you must do. Can I suggest to you that you would write them down and don't do it just for that week? Would you do it for the month, for the year, for years and years and years? Because the key is consistent, disciplined, regularly following God's word allows us to experience transformation. I'm going to ask you a question, and you're going to get what I mean. Which time was Naaman healed? At which time was Naaman healed? At which time did God's work? Was it the first time? Was it the second time? The third time, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh? Which time? The answer is every time. God is working every time. Every time you respond to God's word and you go into the river, you do this little thing, you open the Bible and you read and you serve and you sing, every time you do it, God's working. Every time. You might not see it right now. You're only on the second time, my friend. You might not see it right now, but consistent, regularly following of God's words leads to life transformation. Just because you open the Bible and you say, it's the same old stuff. I got nothing from it. Just because you did this and nothing has changed. That was the second time, my brother. That was the third time, my sister. Consistently following God's word. So may I suggest to you what we have learned from Naaman for us to do three things. Sometimes we gotta let go of our thoughts. Let go of our prescriptions. Because our prescription is for us to deal with this problem, but God's solution is for a new life. And then would you then put down your pride and your ego and your trust in your ability, your armor, your sword, and all that kind of stuff, and just listen and then obey and follow. Tonight, I want to give you an invitation. I want you to think about this. Think back to the time when you perhaps was first exposed to the faith. You first believed. Think back to the time when you were perhaps more like a little child than a great man. There was a time when you believed in the Bible. There was a time when you believed in the teachings. There was a time when you believed in singing. There was a time when your favorite thing to do was to sing worship songs on Sunday school. There was a time where you actually wrote down in your little scribbly thoughts about prayer. There was a time when you were like a little child. You believed in God, but as you grew older, you became bigger. You became more accomplished. You became reputable. You became successful. And you became too big. And your God became too small. But the question I have for you is, in all of your greatness, all of your power and your strength and your wisdom and your strategy, are you able to fix the one small thing that is your leprosy? Are you able to even control this? God says, hey, you're never too old. You're never too accomplished. You're never too successful to come back. And I think for some of you tonight, you are like Naaman in the middle of the night, staring at the night sky. Would you try to trust him again, like a little child? Walk into your Jordan River and do what God has prompted you to do. Put down your prescription, put down your thoughts and your ego. Perhaps starting in a few minutes when we sing the worship song, you're already here. You're already here. You're already at the river. Why don't you go in? Why don't you give it a try?